And I'm delighted now to welcome back to the program George Gummerman. He's an archaeologist, and he will be at the Cerfe Institute's Science on Screen program introducing the film Raiders of the Lost Ark. Welcome back to the Radio Cafe.
It's good to be here, Mary Charlotte.
Well, you were just here a couple of weeks ago, but we just couldn't resist getting you back to talk about, I can't believe you're talking about an Indiana Jones movie.
Well, as I told you, it's sort of the story of my early career.
Yeah, right, being the action-adventure
right,
archaeologist.
Right, right. Well, you know, an old archaeologist many years ago, a famous archaeologist, said that in the mind of the general public, the archaeologist is either the hairy-chested or the hairy-chinned. You know, either a kindly old man deciphering hieroglyphs or the adventurous, hairy-chested guy fighting his way through the jungle and saving the beautiful daughter of the hairy-chested archaeologist in the last reel of the film. So,
I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark, maybe it's the only... super popular action film ever made about an archaeologist, but do you like it?
There are some actually semi-accurate things in the film that I'm
really
going to discuss, yes.
Give us an example.
Well, the Ark, the Lost Ark, is supposed to be in Ethiopia now, and it's described in the Bible, and the area where it was supposed to be found is in Jerusalem, but in the movie, it's moved to an archaeological site called Tanis, which actually exists and had some incredibly fabulous finds in it. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what's real and what's fake.
Actually, it's fascinating that anything in the movie is real, because it's such a comic book.
Yeah, it's everything is black and white, good and evil. You know, hordes of hairy spiders, caverns full of snakes, cobwebs. Even the evil Nazi has an eye patch. So, you're right. It is almost a comic book.
So, one of the things that I find difficult about Hollywood movies is, I mean, yeah, they're black and white, and you've got the competent American and the bumbling natives and all of that, which, I don't know, I guess they're still getting away with it. This movie is over 30 years old, but there's also real parodies of academics. Does that bother you?
No, not at all. In fact, academics, myself being one, are very easy to parody. I mean, we have our foibles. I know I feel fortunate that as an archaeologist I could exist in the real world. And I know that many academics would have difficulty making a living if they weren't in academia.
Do you remember, George Gummerman, when you first saw this movie? Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Oh, yes. I had a colleague who was probably the most boring archaeologist I ever knew. And after that, he always wore a leather jacket and a hat like Indy does. And I always had to laugh about the fact that here's one of the most boring archaeologists I ever knew who was taking on the persona of Indy.
That's hilarious. I'm surprised that Indiana Jones actually influenced people.
Oh, yes.
In the field.
Oh, yes, yes. And, you know, it's interesting. If I go to a party and then introduce to people and they ask what you do, you say you're an archaeologist. At least once at every party, somebody says, oh, I always wanted to be an archaeologist. And then I guess some of us never grew up.
You know? What do they mean when they say that?
Well, I think they think of adventure, discovery, mystery, all the things that Indiana Jones parodies. I think that's what they're thinking. And in fact, when students would come to me and said, you know, I'd like to major in archaeology, I'd always say, before you really decide to do that, go to a field school and be out there in summer in the heat with the gnats and and the flies, and maybe you don't want to be an archaeologist.
Now, how did you get into it? Was it that same thing for you? You wanted adventure and discovery?
No, I think, well, I think maybe part of it was discovery. And since I was a little boy, I wanted to be an archaeologist. I was always interested in the past and contemplated history, but then felt that I really wanted prehistory. And I first got interested in the Maya cultures. But then going to graduate school at the University of Arizona, I got very interested in the Anasazi and the prehistory of the American Southwest.
What do you think it is that makes a little child, because I mean, I never had that at all, be interested in cultures that are so, and people who are so far behind us, so long gone?
I wish I knew. I think maybe we might get more majors that way.
Well, you're discouraging them.
No, I'm trying to be realistic. I mean, people always say to me, or very often say to me, what's the most exciting thing you ever found? And I can list, I can tell them, I found a rabbit nest made of human hair in a cave that looked like a tennis net that was stretched between two canyon walls, made of human hair to catch rabbits in a rabbit drive. You know, those are the kind of things that people find interesting. But what most archaeologists really find interesting is trying to understand human behavior. What happened in the transition from hunting and gathering to agriculture? How was agriculture invented or discovered? How did social inequality develop? In other words, I think most archaeologists today are interested in behavior and changing behavior rather than in here's a nice gold artifact.
Now, archaeologists here are also, I mean, you have to also be an anthropologist? Is that how it works?
Yeah, in this country, most archaeologists have their PhDs in anthropology. And anthropology is divided into four different areas. Cultural anthropology, human behavior, contemporary human behavior. Physical anthropology, like human evolution, or primate behavior, linguistics, and then archaeology, people of the past.
When you study a place for a long time, do you feel, I mean, this is, I don't mean to ask a mystical question at all, but do you sometimes feel like you've gotten to know them and feel like the ghosts of the people who had lived there?
At times, yes. You can't help but wonder, these were human beings with feelings, emotions, needs, desires. But after working in the American Southwest with the Anasazi people for a long time, I felt I wasn't getting new ideas. I felt I was getting stale, was becoming rote. So I went to the South Pacific and worked there, a totally different area, and it engaged me again. And that's probably true with any profession. You know, you do things for a certain length of time, and you start to do it by rote. I know I was chairman of an anthropology department for a number of years in a research center, and I noticed that my annual report started cribbing from previous annual reports, and I said, time to move on.
Right. Now, what is the role, what's the creative aspect of an archaeologist's job?
Well, if you are going to do an excavation, you have a research plan. You don't just go and say, let's see what's there, what can we find out. You know something about, from the surface area and from other work in the nearby area, the kinds of questions that are important, like when did they get corn? When did they start moving into bigger settlements and become more urbanized? So those are the kind of questions you develop before you start the work. You don't just go and dig and see what you can find. You have a research plan, and it usually develops from your own interests and from other people working in the area. For example, I'm very interested in the effect of the environment on the prehistoric Anasazi in the Four Corners area. So my goal was to reconstruct the climate and then reconstruct the population and their movements and see if they correlated. So that was my raison d'etre for doing archaeology there. I mean, I didn't just go there and say, here's a nice ruin, let's see what we can find.
And so knowing what the questions are and getting better at asking the right questions, yes, is really the archaeologist's job.
Yes. For example, for two generations of archaeologists, we knew that people in the Four Corners region moved around at various times, especially at 1150 AD and at 1300 AD. And the question has always been, was it environmental change or were there other factors? Well, finally, after two generations, I think we've started to get the answers to those questions. It takes a long time. The challenge of archaeology is that we can't experiment. We have to do another dig to see if we can confirm or deny what our ideas were about.
Do you ever think about answering the kind of questions that you're asking about past societies? Do you ever think about what kind of records we're leaving for the future George governments?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I'm involved in that, something just like that. People who live near shorelines develop what are called shell middens. They throw their shells in a big pile, and it's a good archaeological record. Well, here we are in the high desert, and I have collected shells from Brazil, New Zealand, the northwest coast. I just got some from Antarctica when I was down there on a Russian iceberg, and I throw them off my deck here in Santa Fe just to screw up archaeologists in the future who will be wondering what kind of climate change happened.
So, oh, so you're messing with
that's
them.
That's right.
Oh, that's very funny. But I mean, is anybody trying to actually leave intelligible records? Because, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, they're going to have just endless sheets of undisintegrated formica, but the DVDs aren't going to work.
That's right. But, you know, there probably will be ways to reconstruct them. And a good example is historic archaeology. That is, archaeology from a period that is written, like the Old West. I have a friend who excavated a Butterfield stagecoach station in Arizona. Now, you think we've got historic records, everything is known, but you know what the most frequent artifact found there was? Mother so-and-so's seasick pills. In other words, we would have never realized that, but those crappy old stagecoaches must have made people seasick, motion sickness, so that was the most common artifact found at the stagecoach station.
You were talking a moment ago about how the most interesting thing that you ultimately do as an archaeologist is look at how humans behave and how that behavior changes over time and over great social movements. In your own work, what's the most interesting kind of changes that you've seen in the societies you've studied?
Okay. Well, you know, one of the interesting things about the prehistoric people of the Four Corners area, from a very early period up until Where I stopped working with is about 1400 AD. There was virtually no technological change. The technology stayed the same. We found no difference in tools. The ceramics that we found were essentially technologically the same, but had different artistic styles. But what we found was great social change. People moving into bigger areas, into bigger communities, moving out of certain areas. Probably the introduction of new religious items. So I think in our society we tend to think of change being mainly technological. I mean, we're all having smartphones now, and 10 years ago we barely had dumb phones. And that this isn't usually the case in the past. Here was great social change, and over a period of 500 years, virtually no technological change. In fact, one of the areas I'm interested in is Tasmania, the island off the south coast of Australia, where instead of increasing technological complexity, they devolved more simple tools and lost whole tool-making traditions, so that the technology went backwards rather than evolving into more complex systems.
And I would imagine that what that tells you, among other things, is what people's priorities were.
Possibly.
I mean, innovation wasn't a great value, and other things must have been.
But I think, you know, if you think there could be innovation to make their life easier, like collecting or growing better corn or collecting more animals, that would have been an adaptive value, a positive adaptive value.
So tonight, Raiders of the Lost Ark, at 7 o'clock, you will be introducing the film, and then we'll have a chance to watch the film, and then there will be a Q&A afterwards. How do you account for this film's ongoing popularity? I mean, didn't a 3D version or an IMAX version just come out?
I don't know. I didn't know that.
I think it wasn't. It was totally sold out in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's the old adventure. In fact, in reading up about this, I discovered that Spielberg's motive was to bring back the old serials of the 40s and early 50s in movie houses. So the good guys, the bad guys, the good, the evil.
And he certainly did.
Yes, he did.
George Governman is an archaeologist. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Mary Charlotte.